Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
It's funny, you always hear that a healthier life is a happier life, and this sounds like a marketing campaign. But did you know that there is actual science behind that? I learned this not from the wellness industry, not from marketers. I learned from an actual scientist. Dr. Robin Miller has a series on Wondrium called The Scientific Guide to Health and Happiness. And it's refreshing because, you know, she's not talking about shark cartilage and crystals and chakras and light therapy and stuff like that. But, you know, actual brain science, body science, how to be healthier. And this is something Natalie and I have been working on. You know, we're exercising more, we're managing diet, we're just trying to be better, especially at midlife, right? And The Scientific Guide to Health and Happiness, I think, is a must watch. It's been really good for us. I think it'll be really good for you. One of thousands of offerings on a subscription video service that has content on thousands of different subjects taught by experts, university professors who are rooted in science and the data, documentaries, tutorials. You can learn as you are being entertained. I want you to sign up today for Wondrium. Wondrium's offering my listeners a free trial plus 20% off the annual plan. To get this offer, go to Wondrium.com/Seth. Again, that's Wondrium.com/Seth. Sign up today, Wondrium.com/Seth. Well, we knew they were going to do it, right? We knew it was coming. The same Supreme Court justices, the evangelical Christians, Kavanaugh, Coney Barrett, etc., etc., who during their confirmations were asked about Roe versus Wade, and they said, Roe is settled law. There's no reason to think it would ever be unsettled law. The courts have ruled the, you know, American law has established Roe v. Wade. And so that's how they played it until they get the majority. And then Roe versus Wade struck down by the highest court in the land, ostensibly making this a state's issue or a state's rights issue, at least at some level. But you've got these evangelical red staters like DeSantis, Abbott, Stitt, and others who have been chomping at the bit. They have been waiting to impose their personal religious dogma on everybody, to decide for 166 million American women what they can and cannot do. They just crawl up into the uterus and say, we own this or our God owns this. My governor's not even mincing words. God, God, Jesus, God, God, God. Jesus is happy today. We have saved babies. That's what he's doing. Protest nationwide, as there should be. The minority justices on the Supreme Court, Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, they issued their dissent. They said the majority has overruled Roe and Casey for one and only reason, because it has always despised them, and now it has the votes to discard them. Then you've got evangelical activist Christian Justice Clarence Thomas, and he alluded to, hey, you know what might be next on the docket? Gay rights, contraception. Oh, my God. Oh, it's just, I mean, who are these people? If anybody ever says that fundy religions are not about control, they don't know what they're talking about. Even those who believe genuinely they are the hero in their own stories, they're still operating from a perspective of wanting control. We must prevent this choice. We will make the choice for them. We don't trust the judgments of Americans or even the world, 7+ billion people. No, no, we must judge. In this case, literally, we must judge for them. And so while I'm surrounded by people who are dancing in the streets because they feel like this is some kind of a victory, the vast majority of Americans disagree. Like, we culturally disagree. The rule of law and the Constitution has disagreed. I was looking at the stats for the Catholic Church. The majority of Catholics, hell, Catholicism forbids contraception. Certainly it forbids abortion, and yet the majority of professing Catholics support reproductive choice. You talk about an activist court doing whatever it wants, exercising a specific kind of religious privilege with impunity, and the rest of us are just supposed to swallow it whole. It is unbelievable. Well, actually, it is believable. It is. It's believable. I saw that poster on Facebook. It takes a pretty hard line. It says, and a hearty fuck you to everybody who said I was overreacting in 2016. Remember that Donald Trump appointed three of these justices, three of them, because he is a devout pro-life evangelical? Hell no. He reversed his position from choice to anti-choice before he ran strategically to target the evangelical vote. His appointments to the court were nothing more than pandering to retain power. Now we gotta sit back and watch Kavanaugh and Coney Barrett and Justice Clarence Thomas, etc., infantilize half of the United States and say, we're gonna make this decision for you because... And then they mumble some constitutional-sounding mumbo-jumbo while exercising not just a private, but an overt activist fundy faith that shits all over the state church line. Meanwhile, the Constitution is growing like a little mouth. Right by the First Amendment paragraph, it's just growing a little paper mouth, and it's just screaming, this little inanimate paper constitution wants to grow little legs and just run over to Kavanaugh's house and Coney Barrett's house and Clarence Thomas's house and just slap them. Bam! And they're not done yet. They're not done yet. So it's election season here in the state of Oklahoma. Getting ready for all these congressional, you know, state House of Representatives type elections. I was at a restaurant after tennis last night, just chilling out. You know, we just found a table and we're just decompressing with a couple of friends. They had these flat screen televisions on all over the restaurant on a local channel. Now, I don't watch a lot of local television. And so I look up and I was surprised because 80% of the commercials were these campaign ads for Oklahoma politicians. And it was the stuff of parody. The kind of shit that Saturday Night Live might do, or The Daily Show. You know, there's this sort of soft, orchestral, loving-sounding music, you know, important but not stuffy, upbeat but also mature and serious. And here's the candidate, pure of face, pure of heart, wearing a cowboy hat, mingling with the common folk because he or she is the common folk. Not a politician. Of course, this is blasted up on screen. There's one guy, I forget his name off the top of my head. He starts his ad inside a church. He's sitting in a pew. He's got a Bible. There's a big cross. And it's like he's a man who wants to return God to our schools and into the state of Oklahoma. Ah, and the music plays, and I'm screaming at the television. Constitution, state church separation. Hello, hello. And last night it was one after the other. Conservative, Republican, not a politician, ethereal-looking human being with soft focus and a cowboy hat. Oh, look, here's a scene in black and white, very harsh with a lot of noise effects on it, with the face of dun-dun-dun, Joe Biden and them liberals. I saw three commercials that plastered Joe Biden's face over a gas pump, showing prices for gas at $4.50 a gallon in Oklahoma. And of course, I'm thinking to myself, the gas crisis is global. It's global. It's happening everywhere. Like, is Biden the president of Britain? Like, is he prime minister over there? They're paying the equivalent of $10, almost $11 in Hong Kong. I'm sorry, is Biden leader of Hong Kong? Did I miss an election? Is there a memo? Over $8 in, let's see, Singapore, the Netherlands, Greece, Finland, Monaco. I mean, but Biden's over there. He's just jacking up the prices because screw you, everybody. Dun, dun, dun. Another black and white scene of Biden and them liberals. And of course, inside the liberal camp, they also see anybody who's not a Christian, especially a Christian nationalist. And they're saying all of this untrue shit. One guy was like, they tried to take prayer out of our schools. No, you can pray in school. You just can't lead a Christian prayer from the teacher's desk because school is not church. And then in the ad, he said, they closed down my church. I'm sorry. He made it sound like you and I showed up with torches and said, damn you all, you God believers. We heathens demand you exit forthwith in the name of Satan. It's probably just a COVID thing, right? During the height of the pandemic. No, no. He came forward and made it sound like we persecuted Christians are under attack because we are being asked to accept a measure of social responsibility. It's terrible. Vote for me for Congress. Oh. I fantasize about leaving this state. Some people say, why do you live in Oklahoma? It's a great question. Beyond the fact that I was born here and, you know, my friends are here, my tennis team is here, my home is here. The cost of living here is really good. If I had this house, I'd try to buy it in freaking Colorado or Florida, California, whatever. I'd pay twice. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's nice. I can travel. I can get out of Oklahoma. But I get sick and tired of all of this insanity all around me. It's suffocating. Do I fantasize about living in a largely secular place, or at least a place where people don't throw this stuff in my face every 5 minutes? I've fantasized about leaving to a place where there is less overt religion, more secularism, humanist values, and not advertisements featuring people wearing cowboy hats, waving Bibles, and declaring that they're under attack because they have to share America with other people. America belongs to us, they say. I saw one advertisement that was going after Black Lives Matter. Somebody who is as white as the sun, born in red state, Bible Belt, white privilege, Oklahoma, and they're going after BLM. I mean, yeah, because them non-white people they're attacking my whiteness. The insanity, it's like it sucks the oxygen right out of the room. I told Natalie, I'm like, you know, man, I love my country. I want to see it rescued from within. I want to see it be the best version of itself. But there's another part of me that would like to get the hell out of Dodge. Where would you go, Seth? I don't know. I could live in Australia. I love Australia. You know, I'd learn to drive on the other side of the road. I mean, it was terrifying when I was there. know, you're driving on this different side and I'm screaming the entire time, but I would get over that. I would learn that. I would get to listen to the Australian accent all the time. I love the Australian accent. And down there, at least from my vantage, the people are not insane. And all of this has an othering effect. I am so, I just feel lonely sometimes. Even when you're in a room and you're not talking about your values or politics or religion or whatever, being conscious of the fact that you don't have that in common. You don't have shared values with the people that you are in the room with, right? The people who are like, did you see that beautiful television commercial about so-and-so who's going to bring God back to Oklahoma government? They didn't even have to say that. You know that's how they feel. There's an outsideness that comes with that. And I think, I can't have this conversation, or this person doesn't get me, or, man, it's exasperating to know how wrong-headed all of this is, and it's suffocating the entire room. I'd kind of like to go be with my people. Is that tribalism? I think, yeah, okay, fine. Is it community and belonging? I think it is a good and necessary thing to be able to have my people. Which is why I enjoy getting out and doing conferences, because at least I can get out of okay America and I can go be around people who just seem a little less... I've got lots of dates on the calendar. Fortunately, I'm going to Portland mid-July, Nashville late July. August is going to be busy. Looks like I'm doing a Texas run. I'll be in San Antonio, Houston, maybe Dallas. I'm going to Lubbock later in the summer. Ontario, August 26th through the 28th. Some other stuff coming up. It's all on the events calendar. Just go to thethinkingatheist.com, but it'll be nice to get out and hang with my people. Anyway, that's just kind of where I'm at. I'm venting. I'm tired of waking up every day and seeing stuff like, did you see the headline from Lauren Boebert? She's a Colorado representative for the 3rd District. Hardcore evangelical Christian nationalist batshit Republican. And she actually said out loud, with no sense of irony, that if Jesus had had an AR-15, the government would not have crucified him. Like, if Jesus had been packing heat, if he had had rifles, AR-15s, well, he wouldn't have been crucified. And I'm like, did you even read the Bible? I mean, regardless of what you think about Scripture, the whole idea was is that the crucifixion was of God's design. It was part of the atonement sacrifice. Even if Jesus had shown up, right? Peace and love, Jesus. Happy, happy, joy, joy, Jesus. Even if he'd been there and he decided to bear arms, you know, he came to die. The whole point was he was born to die. It's a crazy story. But even Lauren Boebert doesn't even understand the faith that she is supposedly defending. You've been watching the insurrection hearings? That'll just make your head explode. They're showing terrifying footage from January 6th, 2021, and we've got tens of millions of people in this country who do not give a shit. They don't care. Smash into the Capitol and there's tear gas and shouting and Confederate flags and blowing of shofars and pounding out these Christian prayers from behind congressional podiums, and they're screaming, hang Mike Pence, and there's a noose erected in front of the Capitol. People are killed. There are tens of millions of my fellow countrymen and women who are like, eh, whatever, fake news, the media, liberals. By the way, Trump is still president, and Joe Biden fell off a bicycle the other day. Heh, heh, heh. You know who else has fallen off a bicycle? Every person who has ever ridden a bicycle. Joe Biden is almost 80 years old. The guy's still riding bikes. He's not sitting in a lazy boy recliner, watching The Price is Right, drinking his Ensure. The guy is out and active. I hope I'm still bike riding at 79 years. I mean, say what you will about his politics. You're giving him shit for falling over on a bike? Did you see that priceless tweet by Jen Psaki, former press secretary? She's working, I think, for MSNBC now, but she tweeted, "Yes, President Biden fell on his bike. To Donald Trump, a bike is something you ride when you have the physical strength to lift your own knees." I'm tired of it. I'm tired of being around people who don't give a shit. I'm tired of being around people who either ignore or support or excuse the insanity. I miss my people. I'm getting out of here. I'm going to come out and hang with you. Can we do that? You got a spot in the guest room? Maybe a visa? Maybe I can stay. Maybe I can stay for a little while and just reset, recenter, realign my chakras and my chi so that my head does not pop off my body. Sorry for the rant. Let's talk to you today and find out what you have to say. I've got Laura. Laura, are you with me?
I am.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling. What do you want to talk about today?
There's so much, Seth. Seriously, when you just said you missed your tribe, this is totally like my tribe. Like, there's days I wish I could, you were like my friend, and we, like, you and your wife and me can meet up with my boyfriend, have some wine, just talk about, like, some atheist stuff.
Or just be in the room where you don't feel like, I don't know, I sense, and maybe I sense wrongly, but I sort of sense being othered a little bit. I don't know if it's all in my head, but there's sort of this, oh, poor Seth, one day maybe he'll know the love of Jesus, and we just need to love him with the love of the Lord. I feel a little bit of that, and I can't decide how much of it is conjured or if I really am that intuitive and I can just feel it, you know, so.
Well, I have an interesting story to explain, like, why there's times I wish I had you around. So I'm a behavioral therapist, and I work with autistic kids, but I work in a school that's totally, you know, integrated with autistic kids and kids not on the spectrum. So these little kids kind of help support my student, and they're very awesome. And one of the little girls had mentioned that she was in choir, and then I'm also a singer, so I kind of asked her, and she's like, "Oh, my church choir." And I said, "Oh, what church you go to?" And she went to the church I grew up in and was in the choirs. So we have a little friendship, but at the end of the school year, the kids all wrote me, like, what they loved about me. It was like a superhero kind of thing, what's your powers? And hers came up, and it said, "You're kind, you're funny, and you're a Christian." And I'm going to tell you, Seth, that was so, I didn't know what to do. I can't even still process it because I can't even comprehend how I feel about my connection with her now, because I feel like I'm an imposter. I'm false. She thinks I'm this Christian woman, and I'm not. And I've been trying to show my love and how I'm the way I am because of me, not because of God or Jesus or anything.
It reminds me of those conversations when someone gets to know you before they know about you, and then they find out you're not religious, and they say, "Oh my goodness, but you're so nice." Like, it's such a surprise.
It really is hard sometimes to be an atheist in a supposedly white Christian national country, like how it is so embedded in our just lives. And we got to break out of that kind of thing. Like, to spread that message of love and kindness and all the stuff without religion being, you know, attached to it, it seems so weird to people, but it's so, it right there, it would eradicate so much of our problems in this country, in this world.
Well, hopefully that young lady one day will find out you aren't religious, and then they have to deal with that in their brain. All right, part of your brain explodes. Wait a minute, I thought they were a Christian. They're so good. And
that's a great way to think of it. I'm glad that you told me that, because that's totally true, to think of it as being an example to her that I was all this without being a Christian.
I'm just saying, I mean, you decide who you want to tell and when and why, but it is nice to see that little, you know, they squint And they're like, wait, you're not a Christian? Oh, how's that happen? And then when they go away, who knows what sort of inner monologue is happening, and they have to reconcile all these other things, and maybe it opens some doors and perceptions. I hope that's the case with you, Laura. Well, thank you, Laura. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, too.
And I hope,
right.
I hope you have a wonderful week, okay?
You too. Bye. Right.
See you later. Bye. 435, hi. What's your name?
William Corey.
William, speak nice and loud. What's on your mind?
I was raised in a Christian family. My mom was a youth minister at a Presbyterian church. And, you know, I'd say she probably did her best raising me in the church. And she wasn't crazy, what is it, like a fundamentalist or radical. But when I was about 22, I had some awakenings. I got into physics and math. And at first, it kind of gave me a disdain for religions. But as I got more into Eastern philosophies and spiritualities that kind of coincide more with physics, I started to lighten up on religions, even though I feel that they took spiritual practices from other civilizations, maybe psychedelic rituals and stuff like that, and kind of took the same kinds of teachings, but put it into their own words. In some places, I mean, I'm pretty sure most of the Bible, I don't really see too much of that kind of poetry and symbolism. But the stuff that they do have that somebody may give them credit for, they always try to bury, it seems to me. Like, I've never heard a Christian tell somebody about psychedelic rituals or ayahuasca and stuff like that. But symmetry is the main thing I was interested in, where philosophies met physics and balance. You got the yin and yang in physics. You got, you know, hot and cold, strong and weak forces. There's always a symmetry to that. Speaking about symmetry, what I wanted to tell you about today was about material science and transformation equations having to do with the UAP phenomena. If you've ever seen like transformation optics, it's bending and refracting light for cloaking systems, invisibility, and stuff like that. If you look at the math equations for stuff like warp drive concepts, it's the same exact transformations for bending space-time as it is for light. Light is just electromagnetic radiation. So transformation optics is a narrow field in the broader field of transformation electromagnetics. But, you know, I'm convinced that those UAPs are our technology and material science because of metamaterials being kind of the thing that is in everybody's kind of mouth. Everybody's kind of mentioning the word metamaterials, quantum physics, distribution requirements from...
I think I've been pretty patient here. There are have been so many claims and so many what I would call deepities over the past, let's call it 3 minutes. There is not a connection between physics and spirituality.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is all the people that believe in free will, they use free will to go to football games every Monday. They use free will to get to their shift at work a couple minutes early. They use free will for all of this. But as soon as we talk about turning this whole world into a paradise with physics, because physics is light years beyond economics and politics. And if you ask any engineer or physicist, they'll tell you economic science, political science is fake science.
Dude.
So I think that,
dude,
like,
there are 150 branches on whatever tree this is. The phrasing within each sentence do not even connect together. So I don't think, first of all, I don't think we're serving the facts. I don't think we're serving science. And I don't think we're serving the audience by continuing the call. I don't see a connection between physics and spirituality. I have no idea what being a utopian has to do with free will or deterministic free will. Warp drive is the stuff of Star Trek. It is not rooted in actual demonstrated, developed science.
Right, but that's, well, always been proven, but it's always been ridiculous because of the energy requirements.
Okay,
would be like that of the mass of planet Jupiter, but material science have brought that mass down to Voyager 1. So if you don't believe that they have working warp drives, you don't believe we could launch Voyager 1, basically, if you looked at it in, like, logic. But no, okay. they already demonstrated this. It's all public information.
And now you're talking about AEPs
like Michio and Kaku get on.
UFOs, and there's just nothing I can do for you today. I appreciate the call. I wish you the best. I hope it's a wonderful week.
Yeah, no problem. I just figured I could get on some sort of platform to get this message out there, because obviously all
what message?
The greatest podcasts of the world are not telling people the truth about what this technology is, and I'm sitting here trying to get that truth out there.
Well,
everybody's on Fox News talking about aliens.
Okay.
Everybody's on
all
Joe
right.
Rogan.
Thanks for calling.
About,
appreciate you very much. We'll see you later. Have a great one. Bye. What the fuck? Enhancing my utopian or utopianistic symmetry, which relates to AEPs and Jupiter with Voyager 1, and then there's a scientist on Fox News. And I don't understand. I don't have the microprocessors in my brain for this. 307 Loretta, hi, you with me?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can. What's going on with you?
Well, as I was scrolling towards your phone number, so I've never got to talk to anyone before, I came by this guy who said that he died and he was at the gates of hell and he saw what was going on and it scared the bejesus out of him. And then you see these people, I see these videos of people that they died and they were at the gates of heaven and they talked to whomever. And what do you think they're seeing? Do you think it's because of their belief system that that's what they think they're seeing? That's the only thing I can come up with.
Well, that was going to be my first question to you. What do you think they're seeing? Like, why do you think they're seeing it?
Well, my pat answer to anything like that is, I don't have all the information. I don't know what I don't know.
I think we have to start with a little bit of brain science. Now, I lean to the expertise of neuroscientists and neurologists who talk about how lack of oxygen to the brain near death causes us to reflect and to flash and to see and to have these experiences. You know, the brain is firing, and often it's firing in very dynamic, sometimes traumatic, sometimes very pleasurable ways when we experience hypoxia. And I think the brain then will draw. It draws on the things you may have believed in life. It may be retrieving memories of those you've lost, or maybe it's your children, people still in your circle. I think the brain is this computer that is then starved of power, and it starts to kind of misfire and do some wild things. But if you have an NDE, a near-death experience, and you come back and you say, well, I saw heaven, therefore heaven is real, or I saw hell, and therefore hell is real, what about all the other people who had an NDE and their stories are contradictory? Well, no, there is no hell. There is a nirvana. There's another planet, or there's a place where physics and spirituality exist with UFOs. I mean, I'm saying it's nothing we can take to the bank. I think we just have to see it as a natural process where the oxygen-deprived brain starts to draw upon what we knew and how we thought in life, and it paints weird pictures. That's all I've got on it, Loretta. Did I lose you? Loretta, if you're with me, if you can hear me, I cannot hear you. Please accept my apology. I'm going to have to probably move on and drop the call, but I do appreciate it. It's a compelling conversation. You know, I was on the operating table. My heart stopped. I was dead for 90 seconds, and I floated above my body, and there was a white light, and then there was Jesus. He was standing in the doorway, and he gave me a big hug, and we sang, I don't know, heavy music together. Come on, ring those bells, light the Christmas tree. Ding, ding, ding. Jesus is the King, born for you and me. And then there was Grandma, and she showed up, and there was a golden throne and a staircase and angel song, and it was amazing. And now I know it's real. I'm sorry. Perception is not reality, and this is still just anecdotal, right? Anecdotal evidence is not evidence. I'm sorry. I've got Ryan at 407. Ryan, you with me?
Hey, Seth, how are you doing today?
I'm well. Ryan, what's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for helping me come to my own conclusions about Christianity. I grew up Christian. Oh. And about 2016, I would listen to your podcasts, and you kind of helped me get out of that. So I really appreciate it, man.
Thank you very much.
My question today is on the golden ratio. I'm not sure if you've looked into it too much, but that was kind of what I went down. I went down the path of looking at, you know, ulterior info, I guess you would say. Sorry, I'm nervous right now.
No, you're doing great. What do you mean alternative info, meaning other types of spirituality or religious practice?
Yeah, exactly. And I work in IT, so I'm very analytical, critically thinking, look at top-down ways of thinking. And I stumbled upon the golden ratio. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that and maybe how that would link to a God, or if it does not, or if it's just total BS.
I don't understand what you mean by golden ratio. Forgive my ignorance. Can you educate me?
Sure, yeah. It's a ratio out there. It's half of pi, and there's a lot of things we can see in nature with it, such as shells, or it's usually in the shape of a spiral. What I came to the conclusion as when I was looking into it was possibly this could be a sort of fingerprint of God. Maybe not Yahweh, but maybe something else. So I was wondering if you knew about it or...
Well, we do see patterns in nature. We see, for lack of a better word, equations playing out in nature. I see them as part of a natural process. I don't look at the natural world and see intelligent design. I see a complex and an almost infinitely complex world, but I don't see the fingerprints of a designer. And if there is an intelligent designer, it's strange because he, she, or it created scenarios that look pretty much exactly like the processes that would take place if there was no designer. So I think if you see this golden, would you call it a golden what? Circle?
Golden ratio.
Golden
ratio.
I think if you see this golden ratio, I think this makes you an evolved pattern seeker more than it indicates that there is a fingerprint or a divine designer or some sort of a consciousness out there that has put these mechanisms in place. I certainly, you know, wouldn't attach that to the idea of any God. And let's say... And it's squillion to one chance that there was a deity or something that put that in place. That deity is so uninvolved in our lives that for all practical purposes, it wouldn't exist anyway, and we shouldn't give a shit. That's just my two cents, okay?
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate what you're doing with the community.
Oh, yeah, I learned a new term today. I learned a new concept. Thanks for the education, Ryan. Have a great one, man.
Yes, sir. Have a good one.
Yeah.
Bye.
I mean, there may be many people who could answer that question much better than I did. You know, if you see something that looks like there is a real method to it, and we often do that. We say, oh, this looks like design, not something that would be produced naturally through the processes of evolution. But we think, man, this looks planned. And then our brains connect the dots. And then who is the planner? You know, then who is the designer? Who is the intelligent designer? And then we see the apologists latch on to that, and you have people like William Lane Craig. I'm just saying. Cindy from California. Cindy, you with me?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Full disclosure, I know Cindy, and I saw you at the last time I spoke in California. It's been like 7-8 years. And great to talk to you again. But we bump into each other on Facebook. You know, I see you in a comment or vice versa. Cindy, what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about?
I was just curious about your feelings about Juneteenth. I was struck by the commercialism that has come out with it already, where people are just trying to sell things with it as opposed to using it as an excuse to learn. And I mean, that's the biggest lesson that I learned getting away from religion was that you have to learn, and you have to learn about people, and you have to understand who people are. And this is a great opportunity, but it seems like it's falling into everything else that is happening in 2022 with everybody just being post-truth and all that nonsense. I'm sorry, I'm rambling.
You're fine. Are we talking about Juneteenth?
Yes.
And how what should be an expression or celebration of racial equality has become almost a brand corporations wear it on their sleeves. People are memeing it to death. You feel like this may diminish the power, the educational and even celebratory power of Juneteenth. Is that your concern?
Yes, yes. And I mean, it's the same thing with Pride Month. I just saw a picture that someone posted where some company was trying to celebrate Pride Month with their employees, and they did it by getting cupcakes of a variety of colors and Chick-fil-A. I mean, come on. You're missing the point.
Well, I'm not quite. I've had my moments of cynicism, Cindy, but I'm not quite that cynical. I would rather live in a world where, I mean, I don't even know what they're doing, but let's say it's Nike or Apple or The Gap or Pepsi or whoever is positively representing the LGBT community and is positively representing racial equality and is positively representing what I would consider to be humanistic values. Even if they're doing it as a marketing tactic, I would rather live in the world where they are doing that than in a world where they're either silent, sitting on their hands, or complicit with bigots and people who are working against human rights and working against education and those types of things. So I understand and I get exactly what you're saying. Some of it is so slick. Some of it does seem a bit manipulative. But the cost benefit for me is I would rather live in a world where positive messages about equality and humanity are part of these organizations than not part of these organizations. And that's my imperfect answer, Cindy, but it's all I got.
It's a good answer. And I'm all for positivity, too. And hopefully I can affect the people around me and help them learn more.
I have no doubt, my friend. You be safe over there in California, okay?
Thank you. I will, sir.
Yeah, thanks. And when I see a multi-million-dollar ad campaign that promotes Juneteenth or refers to Juneteenth or beyond that, LGBT rights or any kind of celebratory message about the human condition, okay, maybe it's marketing, but it's positive. It represents the kind of world I would like to live in. I'd like to buy the world a Coke, right? And keep you company. I buy that. I'd rather have that than not have it. Allow me, if you would, to take a short break. I got bills to pay. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful for my sponsors here. Let me take a short break. I'll be right back. And we will continue with more of your calls coming up. I don't know if I should tell you this yet or not, but I will. I'm working on a second podcast, just a series of these short form 4 to 7 minute vignettes, stories that I think the show I'm going to try to launch in September, but I'm already working on it, preparing it, getting it ready for you. And I know, you know, it seems kind of fashionable, like everybody's got a show and then they launch another show and another. And some of these hosts, I don't even know how they do it. No Illusions. How many shows is he on? Like, part of me's thinking, where do I find the time for a second show? You know, with the prep for this broadcast and the videos and the traveling and all the other stuff going on. But I don't know. I'm just ready to stretch. I'm ready to do something new while still doing what I love here. Anyway, new show, new podcast, short form vignettes, just fun, cool things that'll pop into your feed probably 3 times a week, launching September. More details are coming up soon, okay? So just keep your radar on because my little blip will appear and I'll have details for you in August. Continuing with your phone calls today, let's see here. I've got Terry at 514. Terry, you with me?
Yeah, how are you doing? I'm a Christian, and I wanted to know what's your objection against Christianity before I make my statement.
I'm not sure if you could have phrased that question in more of a broad way.
I'll give you one objection.
My first objection to Christianity is the complete rejection, historically, scientifically, and morally, of the foundational book of Christianity, which is the Bible.
Okay, so how about we deal with the morality? What's your problem with the morality of what is stipulated in Scripture?
My problem with things like, I don't know, infanticide, owning slaves, the beating of slaves.
How about we
executing rape? Hang on, let me finish my answer to your question.
Sorry.
Right?
Sorry.
You've got the execution of rape victims and forcing rape victims to marry their rapist after the father is paid off 50 shekels of silver. You've got a human sacrifice. You've got stoning to death disobedient children. You've got the entire idea of hell. That's a toe in the ocean, but that's the beginning of my challenges to biblical morality.
Okay. I disagree with everything you just presented because I believe that... Hello?
I'm still here, Terry.
Okay, I thought I heard something. I wanted to make it clear. It seems like to me that you, because you said you were a former Christian, and the things that you just stipulated are not things that are in Scripture. So
No. I'm not letting you get away with that, buddy. You do not get to get away with it. It is there in black and white, written in every major translation. What I just told you exists in Scripture.
So let's address one of them.
I can do the references off the top of my head. Would you like me to Google one of them?
That's the problem, is because you're Googling. I'm a person that actually read in the Hebrew. I know the original language. So when you're talking about slavery...
Okay. So if one does not speak Hebrew, but is instead using the King James Version, the NIV, the Living Bible, or whatever, if they don't speak Hebrew, as the vast majority of 21st century Earth does not, then we cannot have a proper understanding of what the Bible actually says?
No, I didn't say I speak Hebrew. I have an interlinear, and I know the context, and I looked at how the word is applied. So I did my due diligence. I don't know if that's what... I think you say you're thinking atheist. If you're going to come with an assessment on a situation, I would hope you do more than just Google.
No. What I'm saying is I can go to Bible. Hang on. What I mean by that is not that I'm going to atheist.hatethebible.com, but I'm pulling up the Scripture digitally because I don't have an actual paper Bible sitting
so
at my desk. So if I
say... Give me the verse.
All right, well, let's go. I actually just pulled up Deuteronomy 22 at Bible Gateway, which is the entire Bible in pretty much every major translation, okay?
Go ahead. So what does it say in Deuteronomy 22?
Deuteronomy 22, verses 28 and 29. If a man happens to meet a virgin who is not pledged to be married and rapes her, and they are discovered, he shall pay her father 50 shekels of silver. He must marry the young woman, for he has violated her. He can never divorce her as long as he lives. Now, can you give me the context of that verse, which would make it moral?
That is so easy. First of all, the word is not rape, once you go to the Hebrew. What it says is taken by force. And what does it mean, taken by force? It means that a man is supposed to go through the father to ask the woman in marriage. And if he doesn't do that, then he has brought shame to the family. So now he has to pay the dowry, because if you know about the Hebrew law about asking a woman in marriage, you have to always give the parent a payment. So that is what it's talking about. You have to you have sex with this woman by force, by not going through the father, now you have to show respect to the family, ask her in marriage, and then pay the dowry. And when you go to the Hebrew word, it doesn't mean rape. That's your misunderstanding.
Hang on.
Go ahead.
Hang on. All right. So we have two major issues right off the bat. First of all, if I was God and I knew that pretty much the entire world was using a Bible with the word rape in its text, and let's say the word rape was a mistranslation, would not the burden be upon me to appear and correct the record in my perfect word? Why do you think Yahweh hasn't shown up to tell the rest of us that rape doesn't mean actual rape?
Okay, that's a good question. First of all, that goes really deep. I'm going to answer it in one way. If I know it's not rape, and I'm not a person that's educated in university, I did my due diligence by myself, you have no excuse. Because you're a person who is a public figure. if you're going to project information or trickle down information to your masses of people that are feeding on what you're providing for them, I would hope you do your due diligence and verify the information. If I know this information, you have no excuse for not knowing it. The word is not rigged.
This has nothing to do with the question I just asked you. And I reject your premise. Hang on. I reject your premise that this, first of all, even if it means take by force, you're still looking at the female as property under male authority, where the man is paid, the father is essentially paid to marry off his daughter, and the daughter has no say. I consider that immoral as well. It fails in your scenario. So how would you respond to the property aspect of how women are treated throughout Scripture?
Yeah, that's beautiful. First of all, it doesn't say nothing about property in that verse. Second of all, it doesn't say the woman did not accept to get married, because we have the story about Isaac and asking sending his disciple no
oh,
Abraham
look.
Sending his servant
oh look
sending wait let me just finalize sending his servant to get a wife for Isaac, and the father had to, he paid the father, and the father asked the daughter, does she want? And she said yes. So that's a precedent established in the Hebrew scriptures that we should apply in this verse as well. You're trying to come with something that's exclusive to this verse and nowhere else in scripture. My understanding is consistent with all the scriptures. So that's what you need to do.
I need to decide how much time I spend with you. Hebrew, for rape,
go ahead.
Violated. To rape, to force sexually, to defile, to violate, to ravish, to mistreat, to afflict, to humble, humiliate, oppress, subdue, or weaken.
Is that the word in Deuteronomy 22:28? Is that what you're saying?
You tell me. You're the expert. I'm just
reading the Hebrew definition
for rape.
That's not the word in Deuteronomy 22:28.
Let's come back. Let's come back to this idea. Let's say that you are correct. And we've all misinterpreted the original Hebrew. Even scholars like Dr. Joshua Bowen, who, by the way, I narrated his book, Atheist Guide to the Old Testament, where we talk about things like rape and abuse and slavery, the beating of slaves, etc., which are legitimately in the Old Testament. Back to my question about Yahweh. If he genuinely cares and he sees everybody is using an incorrect text with eternity and heaven and hell in the balance, shouldn't Yahweh clear the record without question for billions, and why has he not?
Okay, first of all, as far as Dr. Josh Bowen, I destroyed him on slavery, and I have a video on my channel destroying him. That's why he's afraid to address me. That's first of all. Second of all, as far as the word, I have the Hebrew right in front of me. The word in Hebrew is tafas, and does not mean rape.
Guy browsing the internet knows more than an expert on the Old Testament who has a doctorate in ancient Sumerian. Bye. See you later. Have a good life. And decaf. Just decaf. Let's talk to Duke at 918. It says Duke.
Hey, Seth. Hey, this is Duke.
You're at 918. You're in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, fellow T-Towner here.
Well, what's going on, brother?
Don't really have a question for you. Just want to let you know, as a longtime listener, long enough back that when I was a kid, I was listening to you back in the KXOJ days. So.
Oh, wow. Back when I was a Christian broadcaster.
Yeah.
Huh.
We've
come full
and
circle.
Funny enough, I think I met you at a Randy Stonehill concert.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember. It was him and I think Cindy somebody. What was her last name? The artist on stage. Was it held at a church? I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that show. Well, Duke, I mean, it's nice to have crossed paths. Am I to assume that your journey has taken you out of the faith as well, or what?
Yep. Yeah, that's it, man. Yeah, I just wanted to call up and tell you, I think you do a good job, man. And just wanted to encourage you to keep going, man.
Oh, thank you very much, Duke. And nice to know.
Hey,
go ahead.
Let your last caller know. It don't matter if you read in Hebrew or English or whatever language, it still translates to a crock of shit.
So. I appreciate the call. Thanks a bunch.
Absolutely, man.
I mean, I guess that's probably, and I could have brought it up. I mean, you know, there's just so much to talk about. I mean, he's still talking about the book where donkeys are speaking Hebrew. Right? People live to be 1,000 years old. Supermen gain power based on hair length. Men are living underwater in the stomachs of fish for 3 days. You know what I'm saying? Everyone? You know, God creates hell, and then his plan for saving us is to knock up an unwed teenager 2,000 years before the invention of the video camera. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and I'm just struck by this whole idea that for most of the world, not being able to read or speak or understand Hebrew, God locks his message in that language that we do not understand and doesn't bother to show up and correct the record, but instead has people like Terry call internet podcasts to defend the faith. Like, is this theological masturbation? Because it feels a lot like theological masturbation to me. And we should all remember how untoward it is, Terry, to masturbate in public. I'm just saying. Ah, John at 757. John, you with me?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you. I don't know how, you know, you and other people stand it. Listening to all the same old crap over and over and over again. I mean, yeah, you know, you've called it in some of your other videos, you know, their greatest hits. And it's the same old garbage over and over again. I think, you know, part of the problem is people don't want to think. And they certainly don't want to think deeply. And they don't want to think of the ramifications of what they're saying.
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons people hold on to crazy ideas. I know there were a lot of reasons that I did, but it does get frustrating. It's one of the reasons that a guy like me would start to work on a second podcast to talk about something else, because, you know, the complexity of the eye, and Hitler was an atheist, and where do your morals come from, and intelligent design, and, you know, they come up with nothing new, and it does get old.
When you think of, like, the story of Noah, and a nice little Sunday school story about, you know, bringing the animals on the ark. Wait a minute. God has killed every person on the earth.
As young children, they didn't talk about the sound of the bodies bumping up against the boat as millions of drowned people are out there after the flood. No, no. We don't talk about incest to repopulate the planet, right? We don't talk about that. It's just rainbows and doves and happy, happy, joy, joy stuff. It's crazy.
You know, I was raised Lutheran, and when I graduated from college, I had a born-again experience and was a Christian for a number of years, even got an MDiv degree. But a lot of things bothered me even then. For example, just the counting in the Bible. You know, when it says 10,000 people took part in this battle or whatever, wait a minute. 10,000 people in Judea fighting? No, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So you were going through a Master's of Divinity program, and you were already sort of on the bubble, huh? You were having some challenges.
Yeah, you know, I was like, what is wrong with this picture? Mm. And then, of course, there was, you know, all the moral stuff, which I didn't agree with a lot of people. I was always kind of on the outs with a lot of people because I did not agree with, you know, with their ideas about morality, or I should say lack of morality.
Well, the good news is that if you, you know, live outside of these sort of fundy religious claims, questions, apologetics, we get to operate in a world where science brings us a new discovery, or at the very least a new question to pursue every single day. And I'm thankful for that world, John.
And I'm thankful for you and people like you who are, you know, doing what you're doing.
You're very kind, brother. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
All right. See you later. I feel so much love today. I feel the love. Nikolai, are you with me?
I'm with you, Seth.
Did I say it right? Nikolai?
Yeah, yeah. My real name's actually Nick, but I just go by Nikolai on Facebook.
May I call you Nick? Is that okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's perfectly fine. And, I just want to say thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
I wanted to share something because I know there was a caller earlier that talked about people have claimed to have died and saw the gates of hell or have gone to heaven or whatever. Well, there was actually a new study that was published in the Journal of Aging and Neuroscience. And what the researchers did is they recorded the last 15 minutes of a dying brain. And what they discovered was there's this spike in neural activity. And the spike was, the patterns of the spike were very comparable to that of memory recall, dreaming, people, you know, just having these flashes of their lives before their eyes. And so a lot of researchers think this could be the cause of out-of-body experiences and such, and for these spiritual experiences as well. So I think, now that's not definitive proof that's what's going on, but I mean, it definitely gives evidence that it's a completely natural process of the dying brain.
I think, there's an Occam's razor part of this too. I mean, what's more likely, that people are leaving their body to go and, you know, spirit themselves off to another plane or world or dimension or, you know, whatever, or is it simply a chemical process that's going on inside a physical body, right? I think, well, I mean, what's more likely? And I think you're right. More and more, the science is showing us that it's brain chemistry, it's perception, but that doesn't mean it's reality.
Right, exactly. And I've heard people make arguments, well, what about, you know, when you can't detect brain patterns and people seem to come back? But I mean, that's just a testament that our tools and studying the brain aren't advanced enough to really know what's going on there. It's not really a statement of what's actually happening. And this goes in line with the study of consciousness. And I actually wanted to get your thoughts on the subject. Have you heard of the Google engineer who was working on an AI program?
Yeah.
And he actually was put on leave because he said, oh, this AI program is sentient. Now, it's a language program. And I guess this Google engineer, I haven't really looked into it that much, but apparently he's part of a weird religious sect. And he was engaging the AI on a religious topic, and the AI said it had a soul. So he came out publicly, said, oh, this AI has a soul and it's self-aware. And he's actually getting it a lawyer, or he's trying to lawyer up for the AI to fight for its rights.
Yeah, for those who haven't been following the story, and I haven't been following into that closely, but yes, there was a guy, an engineer or programmer or scientist or, you know, researcher, somebody, an expert at Google, who came forward and said that, yes, artificial intelligence is real. There is a sentient program, and he has discovered it. And it turns out that the guy is just a little bit, he just, how do I say this politely? You know, he has not rooted himself in the data, but is rather making a hugely subjective leap based on his own personal spiritual beliefs. And Google showed him the door. I don't know if it's he's on leave or if they fired him outright, but they kind of said, oh, you go have a nice day. And so now he's pissed off, and he's going to make it a legal battle. But I think maybe that leans back into what Hitch used to say. And, this may be an example. Religion poisons everything, right? This is why I don't believe that science and religion are compatible. Theistic religion, certainly, they cannot play together. One contaminates the other. Specifically, religious belief contaminates science. And I think that's a great example.
Yeah, and we see it over and over again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that and then share the study. I think I posted it in your comments, but I'll post it again just so people can reference a study about the dying brain. But as always, I love your work. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Nick. Well, you're a great call. Have a great day. We'll see you later.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
When I think about dying brain, I think about Marjorie Taylor Greene. The first name that pops into my head. Back to the experiential proofs, quote unquote, for God, etc., and the anecdotal claims of people experiencing these NDEs or even post-death experiences. I have come to the point in my life where eyewitness testimony terrifies me. I'm a big fan of true crime dramas. I'm a sucker for them. Oh, look, Netflix serial killer documentary or true crime series. I'm a sucker for this stuff. And time and again, I see that there are people accused rightly or maybe accused wrongly, and they end up in front of a quote-unquote jury of their peers. And then a witness comes out And this witness has a story that's totally different than the witness giving this story. And then the facts are different because it was captured somewhere on surveillance. That's different than what either witness has said, because the human brain remembers things in such a weird and arbitrary way. If someone says, "I witnessed it, therefore it is true," it terrifies me. I witnessed God? Wonderful. That's not proof. I don't trust your brain. I had a memory expert on the show. It's been like 7 years. She was talking about how they staged a crime scene. It was like a mugging in a park. And this was an experiment on human memory and what people see and what implants in the brain and how, right? So they had a guy come in and he mugged, and it was staged. He mugged a woman, stole her purse. And he was wearing a certain color jacket and certain color pants, and he had certain color hair, etc. And so they then questioned the people who witnessed this staged mugging. And they said, "What did you see?" And the witnesses all had different stories. He wore this color jacket. No, he wore that color jacket. He was tall. He was short. He was big. He was small. He had brown hair. He had blonde hair. Everybody, witnesses, had a different story. If my fate in a court of law was ever being determined by eyewitness testimony, how terrifying is that? I don't trust people. I don't trust people's perception. Especially in QAnon land, people are perceiving the most bizarre stuff. Bizarre. Give me the data. Just give me some data. Sorry. Tangent. Let's see. Mary, 970, you with me?
Yes, it's Maddie, actually.
Forgive me. Maddie?
Maddie.
Sorry about that. I'm glad you called. What are you thinking today? What do you want to talk about?
I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank you.
It's been a joy listening to your show these last 8 months or so. When I started deconstructing, you were one of the first people that came up on my feed.
Well, thank you. What'd you come
just
out
like
of?
You, I was, I was raised in an Assemblies of God church. My mom raised me on Abeka and Bob Jones. I went to a Christian school for high school, half a high school. And yeah, it's been a weird trip. My whole life, pretty much, I've believed in God. And now it's like, well, what now?
Well, I mean, the Abeka program, and talk about an alternate reality. That, I don't even call that an education.
Christian nationalism. Yeah. Christian nationalism all throughout. And it was pretty prevalent at the school I went to as well. I grew up in Texas.
Well, Maddie, I mean, are you going through, I mean, I don't want this to sound too cornball, but are you going through that moment of self-discovery? Who am I and what do I really think about things? Are you going through that?
I think I have in some ways, but honestly, in a lot of ways, I think things have pretty much stayed the same. I stopped going to church regularly about almost 2 years ago when I moved out, and I've just been living life ever since.
Well, Maddie, let me give you some encouragement, and that is that you have accomplished what a great many people never get to accomplish. You know, you got a chance to sort of step out of indoctrination and begin to introduce yourself to the world as it is. And I think every day then can be a discovery, and every day can be a moment of sort of personal evolution. You get to live your life on your terms. You get to be you for your reasons at the volume that you choose. That's an amazing gift that you have given to yourself. And I know it's not always easy. I know there are many frustrations, but I'm inspired by you, and I'm so thankful that you made it out. Okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, Maddie, you take care of yourself.
All right, you too.
All righty, bye-bye. Some people never get out. Some people never bust out. Maddie made it. I just think that's the coolest thing ever. I think we better call it a show. I will see you back here next time, and we will do it all over again. Huge thanks to all of our callers. Thanks to you for listening. Be safe, be good, and I will catch you next time.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.